If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk TNT.
Now, let's talk immigration for a moment here. The point is to bring the best and brightest, or those that really need to come here, right? There's plenty of reasons to immigrate to the United States of America. And we have so many immigrants in this country who have become just great members of society. My friend Infidel Farrow comes to mind. He's an Egyptian American. He spent 8 years getting his citizenship fully set in stone. I've got another friend, Mexican-American out here in Texas, married to a top-notch journalist who contributes all kind of stuff to her society and everything that she does. But it doesn't always work out that way anymore. Now that the border is 100% just wide open, let's talk about one Michelle Angelica Pineda, a.k.a. La Chele. Was wanted in Mexico for allegedly leading an ultra-violent gang crew that cut out the hearts from the dismembered bodies of its victims as offerings to La Santa Muerte. FBI and Chihuahua state officials have been saying that this 22-year-old woman, accused of taking part in 5 homicides in Mexico and is suspected in several others as part of a bloodthirsty cell of the Artisanas Assassin. Anyway, it's a street gang in Juarez, according to the FBI. And Pineda was known for her extreme brutality, such as dismembering bodies and removing hearts. And they would take the hearts, by the way, and they would put them in front of statues. This gang member, 22-year-old woman, was picked up in El Paso. So La Chele was arrested by FBI and Border Patrol in El Paso. Shout out to FBI and Border Patrol. Sounds like you're doing your job sometimes here. That's great to see. This happened in the Thursday, February 15th. So Timothy, welcome back to State of the Nation. Best and brightest coming to the country. I'll eat your heart. Wow, we're getting a lot of cannibals and dismemberers in the country, apparently.
Well, Brian, you're absolutely correct. In fact, I have a lot of naturalized American citizen friends from Switzerland, Brazil, Bahamas, Jamaica, Mexico, Canada. And it's a slap in the face to each of them who did spend years and many thousands of dollars and had to have sponsors that would vouch for them both personally and economically, that they wouldn't go on any of our social services systems. And here we have the Biden administration flying illegals in by the hundreds of thousands. And now we're seeing that plants, meatpacking plants, are preferentially hiring illegals. They're firing Americans and shutting down the plants in small town America up in Iowa, and they're going to preferentially hire illegals. And it's really bad. And Donald Trump is absolutely correct. A lot of times, these aren't the best and brightest. These are criminals. And when I read this woman's story, it reminded me of Griselda. Okay. Pablo Escobar said that the only man he ever feared in the drug trade was a woman named Griselda Blanco. And if people don't know who Griselda was, there's a great Netflix special about Griselda Blanco. But this woman reminds me of her. Absolutely bloodthirsty. And let me just give a little bit of background, because this ties into our second story as well. La Santa Muerte is officially Nuestra Señora de la Santa Muerte, Our Lady of a good death, a holy death. And it is a combination of Catholicism and pagan worship, just like Santeria is in Haiti, okay? Just like the voodoo religion is in Haiti. So it's this weird amalgamation of Catholic saints and bizarre Aztec, you know, take the beating heart out and show it to the victim while it's still beating. And then, as you said, putting it as an offering in front of a statue. these people are doing what they're doing out of religious fervor, but it's not a religion of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's a religion of the Prince of Lies.
Yeah. Santa Muerte, a Mexican folk saint, depicted as a cloaked, skeletal, grim reaper who has exploded in popularity among the marginalized and within narco culture, even while condemned by the Catholic Church. So, yes, you're exactly right there, Timothy. It's stark. We've got Asesinos. Maybe I did it right that time. Of art.
Asesinos.
There we go. All right. Well, entering our country here, along with Haitian cannibals at this point, and we had over 1,000 Americans trying to get out of Haiti right now. Haiti's in complete meltdown. Hey, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest that you'd like to hear on TNT, or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you can stop me from saying things like cannibal and Haitian assassin artist. If you've got some better ideas, simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT website and help us make a difference on today's News Talk TNT.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, the National Association of Realtors has announced a groundbreaking court settlement that will revolutionize the landscape of home sales in the United States. In a move expected to bring significant savings to home sellers nationwide, the trade group has agreed to pay $418 million in damages and eliminate its rules on commissions, meaning goodbye to the standard 6% commission for real estate agents in the U.S. Joining us now to break this down is California licensed real estate broker Mark Powell. Our good friend Mark, welcome back to State of the Nation. What do we need to know about this seemingly huge change in buying and selling homes?
Well, the first thing we need to know is this is the biggest change in real estate over the last 100 years. And it was brought about by a seller who said to his agent, why am I paying half my commission that I'm giving to you to a buyer's agent? Why do I pay the buyer's agent who's obviously going to work against my best interest? He's going to come in with a lower offer. He's going to tell me my roof is no good. My water heater is leaking. And the agents typically said, look, the reason why we do it this way is because when we offer compensation to a buyer's agent, you increase the pool of qualified buyers. That's why we do it. So, well, how much should we charge? Well, the agent will say, I normally split my commission. Let's say it's 5%. So I'm going to give 2.5% to a buyer's agent. So this ruling came about as a class action antitrust lawsuit. The allegation is realtors artificially kept the commissions high even when the market was good. So even when all you had to do was put a sign in your front yard, you get your 2.5% commission. When the market was bad, you got your 2.5% commission. So all the jury had to vote on was this an antitrust lawsuit? Are they guilty of artificially keeping the commissions high? That was it. And the jury said, yeah, we think they are. So the settlement originally was around $1.2 billion, but they tripled it because it's antitrust, and it became a $5.7 billion lawsuit. And the NAR said, well, we're just going to settle for $421 million, and we're going to change the way we compensate our agents. So now this is the rub. This is where it gets a little bit complicated. Now the buyer has to pay the buyer's agent the commission. So I go to Mr. Buyer, let's say I go to Timothy, I go, Timothy, you want me to help you buy a house? You say, of course. Then I go, we have to sign this contract. It's mandated. It's called a buyer broker agreement. And I'm going to charge you 2%, but I'm going to try and get the 2% from the seller. But if the seller only agrees to pay me 1%, you're on the hook for the other 1%. Now, that's going to be real challenging for someone who's scraping up $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to buy a house. They're not going to want to give that much money to their buyer's agent. So they may go directly to the listing agent and go, you know, I don't really need a buyer's agent. I'm going to come directly to you. And that creates something called a dual agency. And that's kind of like having the prosecution representing the defense, because now you have the same person working both sides of the deal. It can work, but sometimes it leads to a lot of complications.
But the previous system didn't make much sense to me. And I want to be clear for people because there's been a lot of confusion. I had a lot of conversations this weekend about it. This only applies to members of the National Association of Realtors who hold themselves out as realtors. Not all real estate agents and not all real estate brokers are realtors. This is just for members of the union, right? It used to work this way among agents as well. And it only makes sense to me, having both bought a house and sold a house, if I have a buyer's broker, I want to pay that buyer's broker because then I have confidence that he or she is going to represent my interests. And if there's a financial incentive for compensation from the seller of the house, now my confidence level isn't so high. So just like I want a lawyer, I want to be able to pay my own lawyer in a civil lawsuit against another party. I don't want the other party to be paying my lawyer. I want to be able to pay my buyer's broker.
And you make some very good points. The argument is the buyer, the seller never actually paid that commission, because when you put an offer in on a house, let's say it's here in San Diego. I'm going to use a crazy number, but it's not crazy in San Diego, $1 million. I mean, buying a house for $1 million in San Diego is common. It's
It's a
not
little
out of the
bungalow. Yeah.
It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. Okay, so you have this purchase contract, and the purchase contract says in it, I'm going to pay 5% commission to the listing agent, who is going to give 2.5% to the buyer's agent. Well, when the appraiser goes out there, the appraiser then appraises a house for $1 million. The appraiser doesn't back out the $50,000 in the appraisal. So essentially, that commission is baked into the price. It's always been baked into the price. The buyer ends up paying for it because through the loan. So if I had a $50,000 grand piano in the living room and I said, okay, appraise the house, the appraiser is not going to include the $50,000 grand piano in the appraisal. But they do include the commission in the appraisal, knowing good and well that $50,000 is going to go out when they evaluate the house.
So how does this affect someone who's looking to sell their house right now?
So here, the seller now only pays a buyer's agent commission, and a listing agent commission, and the listing agent is no longer allowed to split his or her commission with the buyer's agent. And then when you put a house on the market, it goes on something called the multiple listing service. That's where you upload all of the pictures, everything about the house, 2-bedroom, 2-bath, the room sizes, and that all gets sucked out into it to Zillow or Redfin. They get all of this information from all of these multiple listing services. Well, no longer is compensation allowed in the multiple listing service. And the reason why they do this is because you don't want a realtor to look at the MLS and go, okay, I'm going to show all the homes that are 3% commission first, then I'm going to show all the homes that are 2.5%, then I'm going to show all the homes. And that's called steering. So this is something that they're trying to avoid. But the truth of the matter is, most buyers find their house themselves. They just search and they go, hey, I found this house. They don't know what the commission is. And they send it over to their buyer's agent and go, hey, can you get me in this house and let's put a deal together? So that was another reason why they did this.
But the MLS is a creation of NAR, correct?
No, the MLSs are individually owned. They can be owned by an association, they can be privately owned. It's just
Okay.
a pla it's essentially just a platform used to put the information on the house. MLSs are typically corporations, they make money, where associations are member driven. They're nonprofits, they don't make money like that.
And they're open to both realtors and licensed real estate agents.
Yeah, you can join the MLS without being a realtor. The only real difference between a real estate agent and a realtor is they abide by a group of some ethics, some codes of ethics, codes of conduct to be a realtor, to be part of the National Association of Realtors.
Well, yeah, sure. That's the marketing thing. But really, the National Association of Realtors, and realtor is a registered trademark. You can only call yourself a realtor if you're a member of the union, so to speak. Yeah. Really, this decision only applies to realtors. It doesn't apply to real estate agents. And isn't this going to level the playing field competitively for licensed real estate agents that aren't realtors?
Well, absolutely. It's going to level it because now you're going to have competition amongst the buyer's agents, and they're going to go back and forth. However, it could create a bunch of online platforms powered by artificial intelligence. So you may get something that looks like a platform that says, you pay us $500 and we're going to do the entire transaction for you. And the AI will say, oh, we saw the inspection report, and you have some problems with your roof. Here's a list of qualified roofers. Or, hey, you have problems with electrical. Here's a list of qualified electricians. So this is going to create a whole nother venue for almost removing that buyer's agent out of the process and people going to online. I mean, and if realtors don't think this is going to happen, try and rent a video from Blockbusters. There you go. Just yeah. Like this technology is taking over not only in medicine, in business world, but now it's infecting the real estate industry, and you're going to see homes being bought and sold the way. Remember when Jeff Bezos was selling books, and I was in college, and I'm like, who's going to buy a book online? Like, I got to go to the bookstore and look at this book and open it up, and no one's going to do that. Boy, I was wrong.
I felt the same way about LPs and CDs when the first iPods came out. It was like, are you kidding? What are you talking about? But and it makes me think of the moving industry too. You know, you think about the way the moving industry works now. It's all on, digital bulletin boards. You never really know who you're actually hiring to move you. The price creeps and changes, and it gets, the app tells you one thing, the dispatcher tells you another thing. I could go on, Mark, but we're out of time. We got to let you go. I'm sure there's going to be more developments on this. Any final thoughts, anything people need to know about this before we let you go?
Yes. If you're really going to buy or sell a house, you want a qualified realtor or real estate agent on your behalf, because when things go smooth and you're popping that champagne and you're coming into your house, that is great. But when things don't go smooth, you're going to want somebody in your corner. And that's typically somebody who has some knowledge, experience, and background in real estate transactions.
All right. Thank you so much. Mark Powell, right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us. And the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk. TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
You know, Brian, the globalist left always tries to poo-poo stories like we let off with tonight about that woman who dismember her victims and then put their hearts in front of statues. It's just some sort of random anomaly. And those are just anecdotal incidents. Well, the statistics are showing that it's not anecdotal, that this infiltration of our government, of our country, this invasion from other nations has got crime rates soaring around the country. We have armed National Guard soldiers on the platforms in New York City. And joining us now to discuss this crime wave is former NYPD detective and best-selling author Michael Solomon. His latest book, Allegory, How One Man's Lies, Deceit, Arrogance, and Greed Has Gaslighted the World, is available on Amazon. Michael, welcome to State of the Nation.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So I'm not overstating this case, that this is an invasion, and we're seeing crime booming, and not just crimes against property, but violent crime, crimes against persons, coast to coast.
You know, it's almost like, you know, we know the southern border has been wide open, but it's like opening up the floodgates. I mean, they're just coming in from everywhere. And it's not only is it increasing crime in the cities all over the country, mostly the liberal cities, but it's demoralizing police departments because they're handcuffing them. They're not allowing the police officers to act the way they were trained to act. They're putting all kinds of roadblocks in front of them. And as you know, I mean, these guys are leaving the force left and right. I mean, the retirements are up almost 200%. New York City is going to lose over 3,000 officers this year alone.
And you have to wonder if that's not part of the intention is to replace guys, quite frankly, like you, with people who might not have such loyalty to America.
Well, I don't know where it's coming from, but it's frightening. You know, it's absolutely frightening. And, you know, you look at the mayor of New York City, Adams, and when you look back at his career in 1995, he was asking Dinkins to side with Farrakhan and use Farrakhan's private security company to monitor the housing authority. I mean, that's ridiculous. The man was a police captain at one point, and why is he going that way? It's something that I just can't believe, you know. And they're handcuffing the police department. They really are. And the biggest handcuff of all was when they stopped Stop and Frisk. Stop and Frisk was upheld in 1968 by the Supreme Court. It was Terry versus Ohio. It's always been a rule of the land. It's not that, you know, the media is making people believe that police officers are throwing people up against the wall and going through their pockets and searching them and strip searching them and just arresting them. That's not what Stop and Frisk is. It's never been that way. You know, it's funny because when I was in a police department academy, when I was 50 years ago, gosh, time flies. One of the first classes we had in the academy was on the Stop and Frisk rules. And Stop and Frisk was just having a reasonable suspicion of something's going wrong. For example, the guy's in the middle of August, he's wearing a down coat and he's got a big bulge in his pocket that might be a gun. So you're allowed to stop him, pat him down. You can't go into his pockets. You can't go into his clothes, but you can pat him down. If what you believe is reasonable enough to say, hey, that's probably a gun, you've just increased reasonable suspicion to probable cause. And now you have a right to search him. If you come up with a weapon, you make the arrest. And that's it. Now, you may lose the case down the road for one reason or another, but you got a gun off the street. And that's what counts. That's what really counts. It's a problem.
And we've come so far. I mean, so far from that. If you look at Pittsburgh right now, I'm seeing headlines that say Pittsburgh police will no longer respond to certain calls, including theft, harassment, criminal mischief, and burglary alarms coming out of 11 News there out of Pittsburgh. And we see stories like this all the time.
It is, Brian, getting out of hand. Yeah, it's getting out of hand.
Brian, it's not just here. Up in Canada, the police are actually telling Canadians to put their key fob by their front door to avoid being attacked in their house, because the people that are invading their homes are only after their cars, and they're just breaking into the house to get the key fob. So if you leave the key fob on a little table by your front door, they'll break in, they'll take your car, but you'll be safe. That's literally what the police in Canada are telling Canadians. So the problem isn't just here.
It's you know, it's the easiest way out of it. You know, they're defunding police. They're reducing the numbers of officers on patrol. I heard Adams last week in New York saying that, well, you know, we're going to have to hire more police officers. Hiring police officers doesn't do it, because the guys that are leaving are seasoned police officers. You cannot rebuild the police department just by simply hiring officers. They have to be trained, and not only in the police academy, but the training is outside. It's like a lawyer coming out of law school, and the next day he graduates, he's in court hearing a case or defending somebody against a murder trial. You don't do those things. You don't learn by going to class. You learn on the job, and that's what's happening. So what you've got is, you could take a police officer out of a 6-month training program in a police academy. It's going to be 2 or 3 years before they even get into the feeling of what they're looking for and what they're observing on the streets. They have to learn to grow into it.
That's exactly right. And that's my point. I think that what we're seeing is an intentional program to fundamentally transform police, not just in New York City, but across the nation. I want to dig into that after these incoming headlines right here on State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
It's hot, see? It's very hot.
It's hot news.
So hot.
Yeah, it's hot news.
Hot news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Russian President Vladimir Putin, following his re-election, issued a stark warning about the Ukraine-Russia conflict potentially escalating into full-scale war with NATO, which he suggested could lead to World War III. House Republicans, led by Representative Andy Biggs, are calling for further investigation into the activities of the January 6th Select Committee following the conviction of Peter Navarro, a former Trump administration official, for contempt of Congress.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to State of the Nation. Michael, I think that what we're seeing, as you mentioned, it takes at least 3 years to bring an officer fresh from the academy, and that's several months, right? You got the recruiting phase, got the academy period of time, and it takes a good 2 or 3 years to get an officer that really knows what they're doing. And I argue that I think what Eric Adams in New York and what other leftist mayors around the country are doing is fundamentally transforming our police forces by getting rid of the old guard and bringing in young officers that are more representative of the community, meaning a lot of times that they weren't born here and they don't have the allegiance to America that a Michael Soloway might have.
Thank you. It's just amazing what they're doing, because what they're trying to do is, what you say, is transform the police department, but they're transforming it in a way that's not correct. I mean, listen, I've got nothing against minorities. Some of them are the greatest people out there. Some of them are working hard. They're pulling them up by the bootstraps. They deserve to be police officers if they want to be. But what they're doing is they're throwing everybody into the mix. You're going to have illegal aliens signing up as police officers soon. Some
That's
guys
what
gonna
I'm
come
saying.
Say, you know, yeah. He's going to say, hey, I came from Venezuela, and I used to be a cop there, you know, put me on a patrol. No, it's not going to work that way. And it shouldn't be. And the people that are going to suffer are the people who are living their daily lives in New York, the citizens of the city. You know, it's crazy. Yeah. What people don't realize, and these aren't my numbers, these are the FBI statistics and everything else. You know, they talk about racial profiling and everything else. These people have done it to themselves, and here's why: because 13% of the population are African Americans, and yet they account for 63% of the crime, violent crime. So, when is it racial profiling, or is it just going by the numbers? And those are my numbers. Those are from the FBI and the Washington Post published those same numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And let's talk about what's going on in our schools, in our cities. Also, I mean, we have the 15-year-old Missouri girl who was beaten unconscious, literally having her head smashed into the ground over and over again by a fellow student, a few hundred feet away from her high school. We've got two officers and a first responder killed responding to a DV, a domestic violence call in Minnesota. Jacksonville beach shootings last night. It seems I watch a lot of the police activity videos and stuff. So I'm just seeing, it really feels like a massive rise, just people, random acts of violence. People pushing each other in front of subway cars. I saw a homeless guy, I assume he was a homeless guy, setting Molotov cocktails into a random crowd of people in the subway. I mean, what do you think, like, societally, what's going on, and how detrimental has the media blitz of the last few years
you've
been?
You've just hit a sore spot with me, because I'll give you my belief on it, okay? If you want to stop crime the way it is, violent crime, you got to do two things. First, you got to get rid of the violent video games. That's a first. Second thing you got to do, you got to start putting God and prayer back into schools and the classroom and into the public. Because here's how it was. When I grew up, my family wasn't religious. We went to synagogue on the high holy days. All my friends were in church every week for confession or whatever. But we knew the difference between right and wrong. I mean, when I wanted to be with my friends on Saturday afternoon, they were in confession. I was the only Jewish kid in there in confession, but I didn't take confession, but I've received communion 100 times. And Father Cagnini, who was their priest at the time, was giving them the same message that my rabbis gave me: be kind to your parents, be good in school, help little old ladies cross the street. And importantly, there is a heaven and there is a hell, and hell is not where you want to be. And we had that fear embedded in us. We weren't afraid. We just knew that there was a right and a wrong. You take two kids today, one who's got a little spiritual belief of right and wrong, and one who's been playing video games all day long, and you put a gun in both of their hands, you tell them to pull the trigger. Who do you think is going to pull that trigger? The kid with the violent video games all day long. He thinks he could just push the reset button and you're going to come back to life. That's not what happens in real life. And it's, they're not, just so desensitized.
Yeah, it is desensitizing, and there's a wider issue as well, and I call it the slobification of America. Okay, when you were a young guy going to church with your friends to have communion, when you went to temple, your mother dressed to the nines, your father was nice in a jacket and tie, I'm assuming. Okay, when your friends went to mass on Sunday or on Saturday night, as the case may be, they had a jacket and tie on, and so did their father, and their mother and sister were all dressed nicely. You go around anywhere now, and people look like they just rolled out of bed with three-day-old gym shorts and a slobby T-shirt that's got fast food spilled all down the front. Everywhere you go, everybody looks like a slob. They present themselves as slobs, and they act like slobs. And this DEI movement is getting people killed. Nashville PD has just announced that they're dropping their PT test in order to get to 30% women cops. It's more important to them that 30% of the cops be women than that 100% of the cops be fit enough to be able to chase down a bad guy and to do the job.
Absolutely. I mean, they've got women out there that not for anything else, but because they're a physical stature, that the gun is too heavy for them to even hold. Or their uniform. I mean, when I was on patrol in uniform, I was in plain clothes for a number of years. Well, when I was on patrol in uniform, the equipment that we wore around our waist had to weigh at least 15 pounds. The gun alone weighed about 5 pounds. And between everything else we were carrying, I mean, and try to get somebody who's, say, 125 pounds, a young blonde, running down the block with carrying that around their waist, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Or, as we're seeing now, overweight, right? 78% of young men under the age of 26 are no longer eligible for for military service because they're too fat. And the police are seeing the same thing. So if you drop the PT requirement, now you're going to have a bunch of Paul Blart mall cops with real guns and told to uphold the law, and they're not physically capable of doing the work, male or female.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, to the point you made earlier about getting dressed when you went to church or synagogue or somewhere else, I remember when I went to high school, if I wore jeans, I got sent home.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have to wear a jacket, but I had to wear a shirt and a tie. I mean, there's no respect anymore. Nobody cares. All right, you know, times have changed and fashions have changed. I can understand it, but look neat. Don't walk around with the plumber's cleavage hanging out, as they say. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. It
does. Well, as a friend of mine says, when somebody's dressed sloppily and presenting themselves poorly, is that really the way you want to present yourself? And we need to bring a little bit more of that back into society. We need to start upholding standards for each other.
Well, the standards have changed. Nobody cares.
That's my point. Yeah. Can't thank you enough, Michael. We want to bring you back because Biden is trying to kill the internal combustion engine. And I know you're also a big energy guy. But we're out of time. We're gonna have to end it there. But we definitely want to have you back soon in order to talk about
it. My pleasure.
That.
It'd be my pleasure. And I'll get you a copy of the book and I would love you to read it. You guys would absolutely scratch your head.
Thanks,
Michael. I look forward to it.
You know where we got the title for allegory, don't you?
I sure do.
Yes.
The word allegory, create a false narrative to prove a political point. Does allegory sound like Al Gore?
Yes.
Nailed it in one word, Michael. And that book is Allegory, How One Man's Lies, Deceit, Arrogance, and Greed Has Gaslighted the World. It's available now on Amazon. Stay tuned for more exciting conversation right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel. Ordered a coffee, but while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Everyone deserves to live a full life. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. But just recently, just a couple of weeks ago, actually, we were just talking about it backstage there. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson out of Wisconsin, Republican out of Wisconsin, he released a highlight video of his 4-hour roundtable discussion. And this discussion is titled Federal Health Agencies and the COVID Cartel. What are they hiding? So there's a 14-minute video that sort of captures the important points and powerful testimony made by Senator Johnson and his panel of experts. There's some very interesting stuff in there. I also watched Dr. Jessica Rose on American Thought Leaders speaking with Jan Jekulik, and I'm working my way through Senator Johnson's full roundtable. So joining us now to talk about this and all things pandemic industrial complex, Propaganda and Truth is board certified trauma specialist Dr. Kelly Victory returning to the show. Dr. Victory, I got to ask, how important are these discussions and how absurd is it that anyone with eyes to see can tell that the mass media cartel can't cover these stories because when they go to commercial break, they're hawking Pfizer products?
Well, first of all, these are incredibly important topics. And the two people you just mentioned before I came on, Senator Ron Johnson and Jessica Rose, are two people who have really been pivotal and great warriors in this entire pandemic debacle. Senator Ron Johnson has continued to fight for Americans' rights to personal autonomy with regard to their health care. And Jessica Rose, who's not a medical doctor, but someone who is very, very highly accomplished. She has a PhD, I believe, in virology or vaccinology in one of the sciences and has been a real champion for vaccine safety for years. They both have been trying to draw attention to the abject corruption and fraud that has gone on with regard to this entire pandemic, and certainly with the vaccines. There's no question that those organizations who are tapped with, you know, they're supposed to be looking out for the welfare of the American people, including the FDA and the CDC, have actually been participant in the fraud. The CDC just put out a study, a 178-page study on myocarditis, in which they redacted every single page. In other words, they have a study and then they blacked it all out or whited it out, however you want to look at it. So what are they hiding is in fact, I think, the correct question. There's no doubt that we have people at the CDC, the FDA, certainly at the vaccine manufacturers who have been participant in keeping data from the American people. They have hidden information with regard to adverse events from these vaccines. And I think it's going to be decades before we ever get to the bottom of it.
I think you're absolutely right, Kelly. In that instance, and I posted it on my X account as well, that reminded me of when Hillary Clinton said, "What do you mean wiped the hard drive? You mean like with a cloth?" Right. I could just see the CDC spokeswoman saying, "Well, you asked for transparency, so we gave you fully transparent documents." Because when I loaded that, I honestly thought I was having a buffering issue and that the image wasn't loading. And then I realized, oh my goodness, no, every single page is blank. They have made every single page blank.
Exactly. I posted on my ex. I said, this would be funny were it not so tragic. The idea, I mean, this is a Saturday Night Live skit that the CDC has done this. And so we need to hold these people to account. It starts with very simple things. For example, we have got to disarticulate the cozy relationship between people at the CDC and Big Pharma itself. The CDC owns, part of the patents for thousands of different drugs. If that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is. In other words, to make it very clear to someone who's listening, people at the CDC stand to make money personally if they recommend a particular drug or treatment. I mean, that we cannot allow that. That's unconscionable. Furthermore, we know that our medical journals, the Lancet, JAMA, the British Medical Journal, they are essentially the marketing arm for Big Pharma. So we can't rely on what we read in the journals. There is so much fraud, so much corruption. The word cabal, I believe, is the correct one. I mean, this would be in any other industry, what goes on between the journals, the CDC, the FDA, and Big Pharma would be called racketeering. It would be illegal in any other industry. Why we are allowing it to go on here is beyond me.
Yeah, there was some pretty, obvious questions that were stated by the panel, and one of them, I might have been Brett Weinstein. I can't remember who said it, but it's there in the beginning part of that that montage for the trailer by Senator Ron Johnson. But they corrected the question. They said, "What what isn't being hidden here. It's not what's being hidden, it's mm-hmm. what isn't being hidden. And we had the same question basically when it came, we were just speaking with one of our friends and colleagues earlier about Lahaina and the fires over there. And it's mm-hmm. just like, we're looking at all the different points of failure, you know, police, fire, every single thing, school, power, government, you know, county board, every single thing, fail, like a cascade of full spectrum negligence. It's almost like a conspiracy theory of full spectrum negligence to not think that there is a concerted effort.
Yes, and one of the things that I want to make very clear is this wasn't mistakes my government made. These were lies my government told me. It is absolutely disingenuous to say, well, if they knew then what we know now. They did know then. They lied. The three major lies with regard just to the vaccine is, number one, they told everybody it would stay in the deltoid muscle in your arm where it got injected. They knew from the beginning that wasn't the case. We have the receipts. We have the leaked confidential study now readily available from FOIA requests from Pfizer. We know that they knew that that vaccine within a matter of hours made its way to every single major organ system. Okay, they knew that. Lie number two, they said that you would eliminate that mRNA from your body very quickly. It's still on the website of the CDC today, quote, within a matter of days. They knew before the vaccine program was launched that it lasted for months, and they only because they had had mere months to test it, but they knew it wasn't days. They knew it was at least 6 months that it would last. And thirdly, we were told that there was no way, no how, could that mRNA get incorporated into your DNA? And it turns out they knew that was a lie as well. And they knew these things before the mandates, before the mass vaccination program went into effect. So this wasn't mistakes that they made. These were lies we were told.
Well, they knew because that's what it was designed to do. My undergraduate degree is in biology. And just with my undergraduate and graduate knowledge of molecular biology, virology, and whatnot, I was out April 15th. I was on Michael Moore's True Pundit podcast right after Bobby Kennedy Jr. And Kelly, I was warning that the lipid nanoparticles were going to make it migrate throughout the body. I was warning that there was a significant likelihood that they would form cellular plasmids, circular rings of DNA that are in the cytoplasm. Because that's what it was designed to do. These weren't mistakes that were made. You're exactly correct. They knew that this is what would happen because this is what was designed to happen. This is how it was built to work.
Exactly, Timothy. And that's, let's face it, that is the purpose of the lipid nanoparticles, these little fat globules, if you will, in which they inserted the mRNA, because we know that those can make their way through cell membranes. We've also known for decades, absolutely. And we've known for decades that the lipid nanoparticles themselves, independent of the mRNA, independent of any spike proteins, that the lipid nanoparticles are toxic in their own right and cause fertility issues and neurologic issues and can cause cancer. These were well known and documented for decades. Furthermore, there's a reason we've never been able to create an effective vaccine against a coronavirus. Because they mutate too quickly. And certainly they knew this when they designed a, quote, vaccine based on a spike on the outside of a coronavirus that was absolutely predicted to mutate very quickly. They knew at the time they designed the first shot that you would need multiple shots, that you would need booster after booster after booster to have even the appearance of efficacy with this thing. This was absolutely calculated. It was purposeful. And again, I can't say it often enough. These weren't mistakes. They were lies. And there's a difference.
And you just touched on another lie that they told. Because people knew that there couldn't be a vaccine against a coronavirus. Because what had people been saying for decades? If we can put a man on the moon, why can't we have a vaccine against the common cold? And that is why the media was all out in unison calling it the coronavirus. And I was out here like, what are you talking about, the coronavirus? 60% of common colds are caused by coronavirus. It's a class of viruses, and you can't have a vaccine to it. And people knew that instinctively. And if they knew that a coronavirus, a common cold, was caused by a coronavirus, they would have known that you can't vaccinate against it.
Correct. And what's really inexplicable is that my own colleagues, people I sat next to in virology class, people I took vaccinology with, are all of a sudden acting as if they don't know these things. You know, they're removing every other chair in the waiting room as if social distancing is somehow, you know, a legitimate mitigation scheme. They're donning and suggesting that people wear face masks to stop the spread of a respiratory virus, something we've known for decades as a fool's errand, and on and on. And so I think you're right. I think number one, money played a big role in it. Clearly, physicians and physician practices were highly incentivized financially. And if anybody doubts that, again, we have the receipts. We know that the insurance companies were paying hand over fist to physicians for getting X percentage of their patient populations vaccinated. We also know that to this day, hospital systems get 25% increased reimbursement from Medicare and Medicaid if they simply write COVID or a COVID-related diagnosis on the admission paperwork or on the discharge paperwork. I had a friend just the other day who went into the urgent care with body aches, but not a single a symptom of COVID. He was tested for COVID. Nothing else. It wasn't tested for influenza. Nothing else. It came back negative. And their answer was, maybe it was too early to test. Come back tomorrow and we'll test you for COVID again. That's all they're just going to test and test and test. And I said, honestly, you could go in with a bike accident with a piece of bone sticking out of your thigh. And all they would do is say, well, it could be COVID. Let's test you for COVID. And if it comes back negative, we'll just test again. It's absolutely out of control. We have got to demand accountability for this. And it starts, unfortunately, not just with the CDC, the FDA, and the pharmaceutical companies, but with my own profession.
Well, unfortunately, that bicycle accident analogy you just used isn't too far off the mark. A friend of mine lost her grandson in a motorcycle accident. He was a truck went through an intersection and just hit him, T-punched him. He never knew what hit him. And they listed his death as from COVID.
Yeah, we know that in the state of Colorado, my home state, they had to retract and redo the numbers because so many patients who had been trauma victims, people who had come in with, gunshot wound to the chest, things having nothing to do with COVID, again, because of the amount of money hospitals, stood to gain by admitting people with COVID-related diagnoses, COVID made it onto the diagnostic line when actually the true cause of admission or death wasn't listed or was listed far down there. So people came in with heart attacks, strokes, diabetic crises, and trauma, and somehow got admitted with COVID or died, quote, with COVID. It's really unconscionable.
And there's also, I think, I've seen evidence of a psychosomatic sort of response that many people had who took all the propaganda on, became extremely fearful, started having paranoid thoughts, maybe hyperventilating, maybe caught a common cold or a flu or had something, some sort of comorbidity they were already dealing with. And then they go in and they say, hey, my symptoms seem to be terrible. My heart's beating fast. I'm scared, and then they get to the hospital and they're even more scared because they're in the herd of people that are all freaked out about it. Next thing you know, they get a PCR test. Next thing you know, they're on a ventilator and getting remdesivir. And maybe you never see them again. And, who knows? Did they even have it? Or did the stupid PCR test or lateral flow, based on a computer model only, just give one of those, whatever percentage of false positives it gives?
Absolutely. The PCR test, hopefully everybody knows by now, was never intended to be used as a diagnostic tool the way it has been. I maintain you could stick a PCR test in a bowl of guacamole and it will come back positive. They're fundamentally useless. I said from the beginning, the virus is real. The statistics are not, because largely of the PCR tests. And one individual who tests positive might get tested two or three times in a row, and they keep counting them as a new case of COVID, which is preposterous. How can one person be three or four or five or more, quote, cases? It's time for us to regain a modicum of common sense. At what point do people need to say, look, yeah, I've got the sniffles, I've got a little runny nose. What does it matter if I have COVID, in other words, a coronavirus or rhinovirus or one of the other myriad viruses that are responsible for causing mild upper respiratory infections? They're out there. They're always going to be out there. Spoiler alert, we are not going to eradicate these. We don't have a vaccine for the common cold, and we aren't going to get one.
There you go. Thank you so much, Dr. Kelly Victory. We always appreciate your perspective on this. It needs to be said. Not enough people are saying it, so we're very pleased to have you here helping us send this message out. We will not do another round of pandemic industrial complex garbage. Absolutely not. We're not going to stand for it. Dr. Victory, we'll talk to you again next time. We have the pleasure of having you on the show. Stay tuned for more with today's news talk, TNT. This has been State of the Nation. We'll see you tomorrow.